Good nap, everyone.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm opening a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee on Tuesday, April 25th, 2017. And welcome back. I promise the next 6 weeks, well, I don't promise, but optimistic that the next 6 weeks should be a little bit more relaxed than the first part of the session, and but no less important. We do have today a small handful of Senate bills that have been referred to us, and several informational hearings are planned on higher ed governance going as we go forward, talking about capital construction and affordability in the weeks to come, and student pathways and workforce topics, and some need for some data as well. So a good variety of things, and thank you for everybody who made input on the ideas for things to talk about. And today we have two Senate bills on the agenda to work today and one public hearing. The first bill we'll work is Senate Bill 41A, which was mistakenly referred to us, and I was glad to see that we're sending it away. It was intended for the House Committee on Business and Labor so that it'd be a procedural motion without recommendation. The second bill scheduled for a work session, Senate Bill 203, is Representative McCune's bill on community college service districts. We had a public hearing on the identical House bill language. This was back in March. Didn't work the bill because we knew the Senate had finished up with it first, so we will work the Senate bill without much fanfare, I would hope, today. Okay, with all those announcements, I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 41A. And Laura, would you provide the committee with a brief summary?
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 41A would clarify that the Oregon Employment Department may disclose information and OED records to public universities and Oregon Health and Science University to the extent necessary to carry out government planning, performance measurement, program, socioeconomic, or policy analysis functions. It updates references to the Federal Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, updates administrative duties and authorities of OED director concerning workforce and labor data analysis, clarifies home care workers are not state employees for purposes of workforce and labor market information, repeals occupational program planning system, and deletes provisions related to discontinued shared information system. There's no fiscal impact on the bill, no revenue impact, and the subsequent referral has been added for House Committee on Business and Labor.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting bill, but I'd be willing to send it back to
Chair Reardon. I move that Senate Bill 41A engrossed without move that Senate Bill 41A without recommendation to the House Committee on Business and Labor.
I'm waiting. We're just getting ready to vote on 41A to send it back over to a more appropriate committee.
Okay.
And thank you, Rep. Wisnett moves Senate Bill 41A without recommendation to the House Committee on Business and Labor. Any discussion? Okay. No further. No discussion. Roll call, please.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Curtis?
Excused.
Vice Chair Wizard?
Aye.
Chair Reardon?
Aye. Motion passes. This bill is moved to the Committee on Business and Labor.
Work it hard.
I'm closing the work session on Senate Bill 41A. I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 203. And Laura, if we could give us a reminder of what that is on a brief summary.
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 203 would define service areas for Columbia Gorge Community College District and Southwestern Oregon Community College District. It defines these districts as the area served by the district prior to annexation of new territory or the territory within a county annexed by the district. The bill has minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no subsequent committee referral.
Oh, okay, thank you. And members, just a brief reminder, this bill is a technical fix to a 2009 law that essentially changes an and to an or, and some rural community colleges, districts like Southwestern and Columbia Gorge, have annexed other counties into the district in the past two decades, which has made for very large districts with two or more campuses. And this bill just separates the districts into service areas, so the ballot bond measures apply only to the relevant service areas rather than to the entire district.
Chair Reardon, I move Senate Bill 203 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Rep. Wisnant moves Senate Bill 203 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay. Let's do a roll call.
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Reschke?
Aye.
Representative Solomon?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lanzillon?
Excused.
Vice Chair Wisnik?
Aye.
Chair Reardon?
Aye. Motion passes. And we'll recruit Rep. McCune to carry this one. All right. Move. And I'm closing a work session on Senate Bill 203. Oh, okay. And we're waiting for two representatives to show up, so we're going to stand at ease just for a moment or two. Or maybe we'll...
...percent there.
Do you want to wait for Rep. Smith Warner? Or? No, let's be easy.
This ought to be good.
Here we go.
Okay, we will resume the public hearing on House on Senate Bill 274A, and welcome.
Thank you. Colleagues, Mr. Chair, yes, thank you so much for having us. For the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. Vaccine-preventable diseases take the lives of Oregonians every year, and young Oregonians are particularly vulnerable to these diseases. As legislators, I believe that we have a great opportunity to help keep Oregonians healthy with the bill before you, Senate Bill 274, which is a simple vaccine education bill. Statewide, Oregon, unfortunately, is well below the national average for adolescent immunization on meningococcal disease and HPV, which stands for human papillomavirus. In 2016, 3 out of 4 Oregonian adolescents, and that's kids aged 13 to 17, only 3 out of 4 were immunized for meningitis, but compared to the HPV rate of 1 out of 3, that was actually much better. But both of those are significantly lower than we would like them to be. That means that 2 out of 3 adolescents are not protected from HPV, and 1 out of 4 young people aren't protected from meningococcal. These gaps in coverage are really more than just numbers. They alter and can too often tragically end the lives of young people. The specific focus of this bill is on residential, public, post-secondary institutions. That is critical because the incidence of meningococcal infection in particular is highest for first-year college students living in dorms or those who are members of Greek organizations. Senate Bill 274 would expand student access to important information about students' own health care needs, ensuring that they know prior to an outbreak of the health risks that campus environments can pose and that they understand the variety of vaccination options that they have available. The information required by this bill would be shared at a time of transition in many young people's lives. This is maybe the first time many of these kids have made their own health decisions, and we think that giving them relevant, clear information about vaccinations in particular so they can make well-informed decisions based on the most up-to-date health information is a really useful thing to do. As of January of this year, 2017, 34 states have an educational requirement like the ones that we are looking for in this bill. Oregon is one of the few states with no requirement either way, either for education or for vaccination, for residential students at public universities. In 2015, at the University of Oregon, a student at the same year that one of my nieces was there, a student contracted meningitis and passed away. At Oregon State, just in March of this year, 3 students caught meningococcal virus, and nearly 2,000 OSU students were subsequently vaccinated. Along with creating a frightening environment, this necessary mass vaccination procedure is quite expensive because then they have to go to this much more expensive strain-specific vaccine. Whereas when you are vaccinated beforehand, you can quickly weed out the folks who are up to date, and you only have to do a lot fewer people. So it can, when you don't have this beforehand, result in significant cost to the institutions and in some cases the state, depending on their ability to cover that. I believe that the threat posed by meningococcal and other vaccine-preventable diseases are severe enough to Oregon's post-secondary students that I would like to ultimately require vaccination for students in dorms and campuses. However, baby steps, incremental change. I believe that the required distribution of the information in this bill is a really important first step towards a future vision where Oregon's young adults are safe from these vaccine-preventable diseases, particularly in this vulnerable moment of change when they're moving into these residential communities. I think offering comprehensive and localized vaccine information to students, I think it'll lead to healthier college campuses and ultimately healthier communities overall. So I urge your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Would you like to go ahead and testify, and then we could just ask you, grill you both.
Okay. Well, she covered most of this, but good afternoon, Chair Reardon and members of the committee. My name is Sherry Malmstrom, and I represent House District 27, which is Beaverton and parts of Southwest Portland. I am a longtime public health nurse, recently retired from Multnomah County, and I've raised three sons who are all university graduates here in the state of Oregon. I come before you today to ask you for your support of SB 274. Currently, Oregon doesn't require our universities to educate students on vaccine-preventable diseases. With parents typically making health decisions for their children when they're younger, many students come to college without any firm understanding of the many public health issues there are, including vaccination. Just to kind of pile onto what Representative Smith-Warner said, kids, you know, they hear a lot. We live in an age of lots of information technology, and you hear stuff. And kids, I think, actually get confused about what they're supposed to do. And you know, kids at this age, they don't always want to do what their parents want to do. You know, and they don't know what to do. So I think it's really important that we give them really facts-based education with a way to, you know, learn more on their own. So if we're to improve public health at our universities in Oregon, this is one way to do it. SB 274 would expand student access to information about their health care needs. We know that education is critical to preventing outbreaks. And again, in 2015, Oregon Health Authority reported the rate of unvaccinated children dropped from 7% to 5.8% following increased outreach efforts. So in other words, education does make a difference, but we need to do more. Encouraging students to know what the risks are for a contagious disease before an outbreak occurs will help protect our universities and communities as well. I would like to clearly state again for the record that SB 274 is not mandating students to take any particular vaccine, but instead empowering them with information and knowledge so they can make their own informed medical decisions. Chair and members of the committee, SB 274 is a good bill meant to act to empower education-centered approaches to improving public health. By passing SB 274, Oregon will join 34 other states that have similar educational requirements. Urge you support, and thank you for your time, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions? Yeah, Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at a letter that's on all this, it came from Allison Krause at PSU. She made the suggestion in here that this information that the universities or those who have housing would get information from OHA, that they could just, a boilerplate document, let's just say, that could be then conveyed. I don't see that in the bill. It talks about OHA, but I'm just saying in terms of lessening the burden on their institution to kind of research and figure out which ones they're talking about and so forth. Wouldn't it be easier if there would be a common template that could be applied across the board just to make sure that there weren't any inadvertent issues left out?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, thank you for that comment. I know that in the language of, in the language of the bill, it talks about the most, you know, the most up-to-date information.
Sure.
I don't know specifically about that, but let me check and make sure.
Yeah.
We may not need to adjust anything, but just have that be part of the legislative intent.
Yeah. Just think about
that
the universities,
that the universities do it in the most, in whatever way is both most informative, efficient, and easy for them to do. And there was an issue with an earlier draft of the bill that talked about like physical copies, and we changed that early on to say they can provide this electronically as well, because obviously the idea is that whether it's on the school website or in emails that they send out to the students, it would seem to make a lot of sense to have it be available in that way in this digital non-paper age.
Okay. Right, and technologies change a lot, and a lot of recommendations change, you know, so we want to be able to quickly give them the latest.
Keep it fresh. Rep. Solomon.
Thank you, Chair Reardon. I would like to reiterate, I really like what Rep. Johnson said in the fact that if we're able to get a document that is, you know, produced in multiple languages and just something would you say OHA? Then I, rather than having something, a different type of message, depending on the organization, wanted to point, and I don't know if you mentioned this, like 34 other states currently are doing this, and wanted to ask you on the electronic version, because that is where we're going, are you able to, or would this be addressed in once a student enrolls, so that, you know, in their welcome packet, a part of information, especially with those that are entering a Greek life, and because it is very concerning with meningitis, a lot of those symptoms do replicate flu and symptoms and whatnot, and so it's just really scary.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solomon, we are trying not to be too prescriptive to the universities.
Right.
We've worked closely with them on kind of the best on timing. You know, I think what we've continued to do is work with them about how can they both get the best information and at the most appropriate times based on how they do their kind of general distribution. I mean, the other thing that I'm hoping and will work with them to make sure that it also, I think it should have information about clinics, you know, whether the health clinic, whether they, you know, who offers vaccinations in their areas, things like that as well.
A lot of them have.
So, yeah.
It could be part of an orientation to their student health centers or a variety of ways, again, they can individualize that.
Just follow up on that. We're checking on staff measure summary here, and it actually would indicate that this information would be provided early to those that are enrolling or registering at an institution for the first time. So I think it sounds like you have that covered. So I'm going to ask a question. I'm not trying to lead one way or the other, but I just wanted your reaction. And it sounds like there's lots of different ways to present information. And so one could present, you know, just a nice form, and it's all filled out black and white. Or you could have one that's, you know, pictures of sick kids all over the place and mass vaccinations and all kinds of horrible, scary things. So did you have a particular vision in mind for how this might be presented?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm no sort of graphic artist, and so again, I would say my hope was to defer to some combination of the health authority, the source, you know, or the CDC, whatever the source of the information is, and the colleges themselves to hopefully do some variety. I would think or hope that they would have a good sense of what is the most efficacious way to present information to students like this, what's going to catch their eye, what they're going to notice or hopefully come back to.
And a lot of times things are linked with other stuff. So people who really wants to see pictures of what these, you know, diseases might look like, you know, they can go click a link, you know, and find out more information. But get the basics first and a way they can research further if they want.
That's great. Any other questions? Well, thank you for bringing.
Just one more follow-up. Did OHA actually provide any input whether they would be opposed to actually being the purveyors of that information? Just kind of proactively, if, you know, again, they're the folks who would know trends and changes and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just thinking that if they could proactively provide that information to the institution, it'd probably be a more effective type of communication.
And we have some other witnesses that
can tell us about that. But I just wondered in the other in the other, you know, in the Senate, I don't know whether that came up or if they had the apprehension to providing that or not.
It did not.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you all. Thanks.
Okay.
Back to rules.
I'd like to invite Andrea Henderson and Alex. Is it Is it Cutler or Kyler? Is it Cutler or Kyler?
Kyler.
Kyler, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And while we are neutral on this bill and certainly support the efforts to educate our younger students on the risks, do have some concerns with the bill and the overreach because of the comprehensive mission of the community colleges. The bill as currently drafted would require us to send information out to anybody that's registering at the community college. So, for example, our thousands of seniors that access community education classes would be required to notify them. When we contract with local businesses to provide upgraded skills for their workforce, all of the business employees would have to be notified, as well as small business owners that are accessing our small business development centers. So we would recommend that this be targeted very narrowly to those students that are in actual campus housing. We have four schools that have dorms, Treasure Valley, Lane, Southwestern, and Central Oregon. And even of those that have dorms, at Lane, less than 1% of their students are actually in the dorms. At the other three colleges, it's less than 5%. We think it would be beneficial to be able to target this information directly to those younger students who do live in the dorms. And we'd be happy to work with the proponents of the bill to accomplish that.
And that's sort of the way I read it. So we need to check on that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. We had our public health officer come up and testify on the other side on this bill when it was first introduced, and he described Lane County's response to the 2015 meningitis outbreak at the University of Oregon. We spent a lot of time, our staff over at the U of O, trying to ensure that students signed up for the mass vaccination clinics that were a result of that outbreak. The immunization in that case was actually a three-part immunization, so there was sort of a sustained effort necessary on the part of the students to come back and get that vaccination. My understanding is in the marketplace there's also a two-part, which is somewhat more convenient. We support this measure. We think it's a great idea. We do. We did spend a fair amount of time as well on the campus in terms of epidemiology of that outbreak, trying to make sure that we understood where students had been, and certainly a lot of that effort was designed to protect the community at large because we are porosity, if that's the term, between the university campus and the community at large. We do a number of different kinds of marketing of the public health efforts in Lane County, whether it's through television ads or bus placards, all kinds of different social media that we endeavor to spread that the word. And as the doc indicated in his House testimony, county public health agencies are also a resource in this regard.
Great. Questions? I'm just curious. Were you able to identify the source of contact for the student who did pass away?
Chair Reardon, I was not really in the weeds in that, but my understanding is, yeah, I mean, when I talked about the epidemiology, I mean, they really delve in to that to ensure that they understand, you know, who students who are infected have been in contact with in order to try to, you know, get in front of that and ensure that those people are also taking precautions or receiving vaccination. So it's almost like a forensic effort to sort of figure out who people have been in contact with.
Great. Thank you both for your testimony. Any other questions? I'm definitely interested in pursuing the any language changes if necessary. Are you going to offer some changes, or should we work with these bill sponsors?
I'd be happy to work with the sponsors to come up with some changes that are agreeable to everyone.
That would be super helpful.
Okay. Great.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone from the public that would like to testify? We're kind of excited. This doesn't happen all the time that we get to public testimony, so thank you.
No, we're not exactly public.
Chair Reardon and members of the committee, thank you for considering us members of the public. But, Amanda Dalton here on behalf of GlaxoSmithKline with Nanheim.
Nanheim here on behalf of GlaxoSmithKline. For the purposes of full disclosure, we represent GlaxoSmithKline, and they do make vaccines. And we support this bill, and we're happy to answer any questions that you have. The issue that was raised by the community colleges is one which we discussed on the Senate side, not in terms of community colleges. It was another college that raised the issue. And the discussion centered around students. Yes, you have some students in dorms, and you have others who are not, but they have contact with one another. They even visit each other in the same places. And so it was decided not to have that kind of an exclusion.
And then Chair Reardon, members of the committee, Amanda Dalton, again, for the record, just a couple other things that we wanted to highlight that were changed. So we went through pretty significant negotiations on the Senate side with the universities and colleges and student associations, which you can imagine had a lot of questions and concerns. And I think it was mentioned we did remove, there was a requirement to receive a notice of receipt, for example. So we did remove that. Mm-hmm. It was actually a different university that had requested the flexibility to consult either the CDC or OHA. And I apologize, there was a package of documents that was posted on OLIS on the Senate side that looks like didn't make it over here that will show you links to sample flyers from Washington State. Idaho does a video. So you can see kind of everyone does it a little bit differently. They could also consult with their kind of local health department to provide information. OSU does a pretty significant packet. And just to kind of reiterate on Nan's point, the comment about, the other thing that came up on the Senate side was kind of the boyfriend-girlfriend in the dorm that doesn't necessarily live in the dorm, not getting provided that information. And so I understand the challenges, but I will say, based on the way the bill was narrowed on the Senate side, we are only requiring this information be provided once at registration or enrollment, and there is the flexibility to provide that electronically. So in theory, it is part of a broader email. Okay. We also added a private right of action, protection from liability. Just that was something that came up on the Senate side, so I want to make sure to draw it to your attention, and we'll send that into the committee staff so you can see the video and the sample flyer.
Okay, that's very helpful. Any other questions? All right, great. Well, thank you. That's very helpful.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
No other testimony. I'm closing public hearing on Senate Bill 274A, closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee. Closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee.